How good are your foundations? How well dug in are your foundations? See, we don't have to be clever to know that for a tall building to stay standing, to withstand the elements, to withstand earthquake, that it has to have good foundations. We know this, don't we? And we know that Jesus told us something about building your house on the rock, not the sand, for foundations. Because as those of you who know me know that I don't care that much about buildings. I'm not talking about physical foundations. I'm talking about spiritual foundations. How good are your spiritual foundations, your roots in Jesus Christ, knowing him? See, Paul is referring to the spiritual foundations that he has when he writes towards the end of his letter. And in verse 11, he says, whatever the circumstances, I've learned to be content. Whatever is happening in need and with plenty of stuff around me, he's saying, I've done both. I've had both. But I've learned that whatever, to be content. He goes on in verse 12, I have learned the secrets of being content in any situation, in every situation, no matter what comes my way, whatever wobbles, whatever stuff is thrown at me, I've learned the secret of being content. Listen to that language of learning, of secret, something that is not easily found, something that the average person might not know. But Paul has learned it. He's discovered it. He's not talking about something that he just fell into one day. He's not talking about something that he was able to read in a book, although he was very scholarly, and then suddenly everything all fell into place. No, this is something that has been shaped in him, something that has formed in him, something that has come about as he has dug and developed his own spiritual foundations. It's fundamental now to who he is. And those foundations were useful to him, because the reality is that now he's writing this letter from, we understand, prison conditions. And do you think that the Romans were going to keep him well fed in prison? Probably not. So he was reliant on other people sending in food parcels, sending in resources for him. So those foundations came incredibly useful. It wasn't always easy. Spiritual foundations will be useful for us, because our culture, our world, the way that life happens around us in everyday society, are not going to give us those foundations for us. In fact, they will give us entirely the opposite. Our consumer culture wants you to always be discontent, to always want that little bit more, to always see that other new model of mobile phone or whatever it is, and to hanker after it. In fact, for advertisers, people who create all the adverts that are bombarding all around us, whether it's TV, on the internet, or posters, or whatever, for advertisers, the one thing they do not want you to be is content. Because if you're content, you won't buy their next products that they're trying to sell to you. So it's in their interest to make you not content. Oh, are you feeling a little bit queasy? Well, that's okay, because we've got a pill for that. Why don't you try this new pill products that we've got for queasiness? When actually you could have just survived the day perfectly well feeling a little bit queasy. It makes you not content. All those adverts saying, upgrade, buy the next model. It's just trying to take you from where you are to being that little bit discontent so that you then shell out the money to get the thing. But of course, the thing won't make you content. It just leads you to the next advert. So our culture will not give you these foundations. You've got to learn it from elsewhere. To be content. Now, let's be clear. Being content in whatever circumstance, in any and every situation, is not about being in denial. It's not about saying, I don't have any needs. If you have genuine needs, then guess what? You have genuine needs. You don't have to be in denial about it to be still content. You can still say, actually, I do need this. I do need food on the plate for tonight or tomorrow. I do need a shelter over my head. But those are genuine needs. That is fine. It's not about denying that. Being content is not about not asking when you have genuine need. It's not about saying, oh, actually, I don't need anything, when actually you're going to starve for the next 5 days. That's just being stupid. Right? That's just being silly. Right? You can be in genuine need. You can ask because you are in genuine need and still be content. It's not about not asking. And it's also, therefore, not about not receiving. So if you're in genuine need and someone wants to help meet that need, then you can receive and still be content. Just because you're finding this spiritual contentedness, which comes as a product of your deep spiritual roots, doesn't mean that you can't receive. You can. They do go together. The difference is in the mood. You see, I think Paul still prayed for his needs. In fact, we know this if you read just back to verse 6. Paul says, present all your prayers and requests before God. But by being content, you're learning not to whinge about it. You're learning not to let the need dominate your whole thinking. You're learning to not let the need kind of submerge you, so that you can still see and pray and act and be in a bigger picture, even though you have this genuine need and you are bringing your requests. So it's about the mood that you can be in. See, Paul writes, I know what it is to have plenty. I know what it is to have need. Now, as I said a few weeks ago, there is no way that I can compare my life and my life experiences to Paul. I haven't had any of the stuff that Paul has had, really. But Karen and I, we have known what it means to be in plenty. And we have known what it means to be in needs. We've known back in the day when I was working in engineering to get very generous project execution bonuses. And in those times of plenty, we made it our thing that as soon as we knew that the bonus was coming, as soon as we knew what size it was going to be, that we would give away a top slice, a significant percentage, and give it away. And then we'd work out who we were going to give it to. And so the questions became not are we going to give stuff away, but who are we going to give it to and how fast can we write the checks? Because we were in plenty. But we've also known times where we've had no fixed income. And we've been ministering and we've been figuring that we're going to have to live more simply, reduce our family budget and live off reserves. And we were okay because we had reserves from those plentiful times in engineering. But we didn't know how long we were going to have to do this for. So we didn't know whether the reserves would actually last for the time that we'd have to do this for. And so we were in relative need. But God blessed us. The reserves held out. I mean, I remember, you know, just 6 weeks into doing this thing, the car blew up. And there was, you know, one of these engine control blocks, they call it. Probably a tiny part about that big, 650 quid to replace and get the car running again. 6 weeks into trying to live off our reserves. Why does this happen? But God was faithful. And there were times where people would just post an envelope through the door stuffed with a few £10 notes or Tesco gift cards, which we gratefully received, knowing that it was part of God's provision and economy for us. Because we were learning to dig deeper spiritual foundations. And so principles that I would suggest to try and adopt to do this. The first principle is to learn to live more simply. To review your clothing budget or your gadgets budget or the frequency at which you change your phone or the several hundred pounds of phone in your pocket. I mean, 20 years ago, we would never have done that. We'd never have carried £500 in our back pocket 20 years ago. It was like mad. But so live more simply. Find a simpler way. For each person, that will be different. I will never prescribe to an individual what they should or shouldn't do because they have to work it out for themselves by digging their own spiritual foundations. So live more simply. Second principle, freely give. You've heard me speak before about having an attitude to giving, which is frankly hilarious. Comes from the Greek word, hilasterion. Give hilariously. Yeah, you can have this money. You take it. I'm not going to hold you any more to account for it other than that you register that I've given you this gift. And now you spend it how you see fit. Here you go. Take it. Have it. As I say, it's not a question of do we give, it's a question of who we give it to and how fast can we write those checks or press the bank transfers. Because we just freely give and dispatch the resources for someone else to be blessed with and use. But here's the other side of this freely give principle. Freely give and freely receive. Now, I say this because I come across people who are struggling with what it means to freely give. That's okay. It's something that God has to work in each of us to be able to freely give. But it becomes obvious to me that in their struggling to freely give, they are singularly unable to receive. This is a problem. If you're living in the economy of God, then freely give, but be also able to freely receive. If someone wants to bless you, then be blessed. Be blessed by it. It's not super spiritual. It's not clever at all to say, actually, I don't need that. I can't take it. I mean, unless you're like super rich and you really, really don't need it. Yeah, if there's a need there and someone is blessing you, then just accept it and say, thank you, God. Thank you for this blessing. May I do the same for someone else sometime. Freely give and freely receive. Third principle, after living simply and seconds, freely give, freely receive. Third principle is no hoarding. And hoarding here, I'm kind of focusing more on financial reserves. Now, having financial reserves is okay to a limit. It's okay to plan for the future. It's okay to provision for the future. It's okay to think about retirement and pension pot. I must sort that out one day. It's okay to those who all find that good stewardship. That's perfectly fine. But just hoarding and hoarding mountains and mountains and mountains of cash for the sole purpose other than just having mountains of cash, I'm not sure that that is the way to live spiritually. If you have resources beyond your likely needs, even allowing a bit of contingency and margin, then put those to work. Invest. You choose how you're going to do that, but put it to work rather than just accumulating and accumulating. For every person, that will be different. So you have to work that out. It's okay to have reserves, but within reason. Well, now let's think about our basic needs. There was a guy, Maslow, who came up with this, it will be on the screen, this hierarchy of needs. You can see the words there. And he figured that it's like a pyramid. You have to start with your basic needs. It's no use talking to someone about being superly creative and doing all this great stuff if they're starving to death and they've got no water and no shelter. Start with their basic needs and then work up through safety and security, your social family, and then your sense of esteem and your confidence and up to the top for creativity. Now, of course, today, in our culture, we know that this pyramid is fundamentally wrong. It is missing something that it's today's world, blindingly obvious, especially for our young people. So today's version of a pyramid looks like this. Well, okay. Well, indeed. Like I say, today, you know, right? But more seriously, I think there is something fundamentally wrong with this pyramid. I think it's got a lot of value in it. It teaches us a lot. But there is something fundamentally wrong. Because at that bottom level, as well as the basic physical things that you need, food, shelter, water, you need spiritual connection. You need spirituality. And that applies at the base. And you need to then develop spiritual foundations. There we go. So this is my improved version of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. That spirituality is a basic human need as we are created in the image of God. And the calling of God on us is to dig spiritual foundations. And as you go deeper, as you dig those foundations, you can learn to accept and hold intention. The tension between accepting what you have for now and the request for God for provision going forward and into the future. Intention, what you have for now and asking for God for provision to go forward with. So you can rejoice even in the now, though you don't yet have stuff that you believe you need. And bring those requests to God, rejoicing in where you are right now. As a church, we have to do this all the time. I keep a list. I surveyed it this morning. It has about 8 things on it of resources that we call on God to give us, mostly in the form of people who are willing to serve and do stuff, in all kinds of roles, in all over the aspects of church life. And time and time again, we have prayed and prayed for different resources, and we've seen God give. But what we've learnt to do, and we've learnt to do this as a leadership team, is to say to God, God, we thank you for where we are now. We see a need for a person to do role X, Y, or Z. Please send us that person, but for now we will still rejoice. And we will hold that tension. And we'll also be open to review, because maybe God is saying, actually, you don't need a person to do that. You need a person to do this. And we will be open for God to gently steer us. That's why God's saying, I've never given you that person, because you need that person. So we'll hold that tension. Learn to do it in your own life. And as you do that, you can learn, even when we have acute needs, which happens from sometimes, even when we have acute needs, to just bring them before God, seeing the bigger picture. Lord, if this need was filled, then we would be able to do this much better. To do that without moaning about it. To do that without the acute need becoming a preoccupation and taking us over. I visited different sized churches when we were on sabbatical, going to the different Sunday services. We went to some big churches. They were dripping with resources. We went to some small churches that were so threadbare, you kind of wondered, will they still be here in a year's time? But as well as kind of assessing how much resources they had, we also thought, what's the spiritual atmosphere here? What's the spiritual temperature here? Let me tell you, there is not a direct correlation between the drippingness of resources and the spirituality of the church. It's not a simple one-to-one mapping. It doesn't work like that. Some of the smaller, seemingly less well-endowed places were the more spiritual. Remember that God is a God of abundance. That doesn't mean to say that we're all dripping with excess all the time. But it does mean we can learn to live in the expectation and the joy of what God gives and what he will give. And if all this seems too hard, if all this seems too remote, remember what we've reported back when we've come back from places like Zambia and Sierra Leone, where we've visited projects that are doing incredible stuff, housing kids off the streets, housing and educating disabled children, with next to no resources. With light switches hanging off the wall, bulbs missing, and can they actually feed these kids tomorrow? They have this faith in God's abundant giving. So let us learn to live simply, to freely give and receive, to ask where there is need, but not excessively hoard. To learn to be content, whatever the circumstances. As we do this, and as we freely give, Paul describes it as another offering. Remember a few weeks ago, where he described the lives of these Philippian Christians as akin to one of the offerings in the Old Testament, the burnt offering, where you totally give the animal over. So he's saying, look, you're totally giving of yourselves. And he was saying, my life, if I get the chop from the Romans, it will be like my life is poured as a drink offering on top. And now he's saying, your giving, your ability to just freely give and be content in the abundance of God is like the incense, the sweet smell that wafts over the whole proceedings, the whole deal of worship. This is achieved as we dig spiritual foundations.